Sick Enough, Chapter 19, Women, Sexual, and Reproductive Health. Case, Angela. Angela is a 32-year-old, cisgender, South Asian female who had restrictive anorexia nervosa for 2 years when she was a teenager. She feels she has been recovered for years, although she is still quite strict in her food and exercise rules, monitors her weight daily, and lives on the low side of a safe weight range. Her menstrual periods, regular for years on the pill, now come every few months off the pill at unpredictable times. Angela and her husband want to get pregnant. They have been trying for the past 6 months without success, so they go to see her gynecologist to consider fertility assistance. At the appointment, the doctor takes the time to ask thoughtful questions. In the course of this conversation, Angela reveals that intercourse has always been painful for her, although lubrication helps. The doctor also inquires about Angela's eating, exercise, weight, and history of anorexia. She examines Angela and sends off some routine lab work. Background. This chapter reviews the relationship between eating disorders, fertility, and pregnancy. Unfortunately, many patients with eating disorders have been threatened at some point by someone saying, "If you keep this up, you'll never be able to have kids." First of all, such a threat is unkind and scientifically inaccurate. The feminist in me bristles at the tendency for women to be shamed, blamed, and frightened within the medical system. Second of all, many of my patients were told this when they were teenagers who weren't even contemplating their future fertility. Nonetheless, the comment sticks and lingers. Broadly speaking, given that many women who have never had an eating disorder struggle with fertility, full recovery should give women as good a chance of getting pregnant as any woman has. The data on this topic emerged from two main sources: eating disorder centers and the general population. Not surprisingly, studies from eating disorder centers represent patients with a history of high acuity or longer lasting disease than studies that draw from the general population. Thus, some research shows significant differences in fertility and pregnancy outcomes in those with eating disorder compared with healthy controls, while other research shows fewer differences. On the whole, the more severe or prolonged the eating disorder, and the more disordered the woman is at the time of trying to get pregnant or sustain a pregnancy, the more significant the medical, gynecological, and obstetrical complications. Sex. Let's start by talking about sex. As one might imagine, individuals with a mental illness that radically distorts body image can have higher rates of poor sexual function. Most studies show that among patients with eating disorders, those with anorexia nervosa have the lowest levels of libido, highest avoidance of sexual relationships, and worst anxiety, correlated with BMI. In one study, patients with bulimia nervosa did not have different sexual function compared with controls unless they had significant depression. Another study showed that women with binge eating disorder in larger bodies have higher sexual dysfunction compared with women in bodies who do not have BED. Some individuals dissociate during sexual experiences. Dissociation is a psychological reaction in which an individual may feel absent, out of body, or unaware of what they are doing, with little or no memory of what happened while dissociated. A study showed that women who both dissociate and have a tendency toward binge eating have an actual measurable stress response with elevated blood cortisol levels during sexual stimuli. Pain during penetrative intercourse is quite common in females with malnutrition. First of all, malnourished tissues become more fragile, so intercourse can physically damage the vagina. Second, a low estrogen state will also contribute to vaginal dryness and fragility, as well as to decrease lubrication. Pelvic floor dysfunction, discussed in Chapter 11, can also exacerbate pelvic pain and vaginal discomfort. Sometimes a short course of vaginal estrogen cream is useful while working toward weight restoration and before sex hormone production has resumed. In most cases, use of a good quality lubricant during intercourse will help reduce pain, as will pelvic floor therapy. Open communication, attention to foreplay, patience, and compassion are all key elements in maintaining or resuming sexual activity. How do eating disorders affect fertility? For many women, unrealistic body ideals and societal overvaluation of thinness make pregnancy and early motherhood an anxiety-provoking time with regards to body image. Photos of celebrities who got their body back, or didn't, whatever these concepts mean, after pregnancy abound. For some reason, possessing a pregnant belly is read as an invitation to body commentary and even touching by complete strangers. Where women all too often participate in or have judgmental body commentary foisted upon them on any given day, pregnancy appears to magnify this tendency. What we do know about eating disorder, or what do we know about eating disorders and how they affect fertility? A large study in the Netherlands evaluated almost 9,000 women living in the city of Rotterdam. This was a population study rather than one emerging from an eating disorder program. Women with bulimia nervosa had more than double the odds of having undergone fertility treatment relative to women without a psychiatric disorder. A large Swedish study of patients who had had at least one inpatient eating disorder admission evaluated pregnancy outcomes over 15 years. Patients with anorexia nervosa were less than half as likely to become pregnant during the study period as control subjects without an eating disorder history. Across all the eating disorders, pregnancy and childbirth rates were lower than those of controls. Another study in a private infertility clinic showed that a remarkable 20% of women presenting for their first intervention met criteria for a current or past eating disorder. None of these patients had disclosed the eating disorder history in their reproductive endocrinologist. These data show that many women have an active eating disorder or disordered eating that is going undetected and untreated. They may then struggle to get pregnant because ongoing psychological and nutritional stressors contribute to decreased ovulation and impaired fertility. The flip side of the fertility clinic coin is unexpected pregnancy. All patients with an eating disorder history in the Rotterdam study had higher incidences of unexpected pregnancy than those without an eating disorder. The rates were found in patients with anorexia nervosa in the year prior to pregnancy, in whom 55% of their pregnancies were a surprise. Other studies have confirmed that those with a history of anorexia nervosa may have up to double the unexpected pregnancy rate of the general population. Because patients with eating disorders may not have regular periods, they may think they are protected from getting pregnant. This is a mistake. As I mentioned in Chapter 3, I like to remind my patients that eggs happen. That is, even if a woman hasn't had a period in months and might be in the depths of eating disorder behaviors, this is no guarantee she won't get pregnant. Anyone who is sexually active in a heterosexual relationship and who doesn't currently desire pregnancy should use birth control consistently. Many doctors lack training in this area. 84% of clinicians in Australian and New Zealand fertility clinics agreed that it is important to screen for eating disorders, but only 35% routinely did, and only 9% said their clinics had practice guidelines for management of eating disorders. Fully 92% of interviewed clinicians felt they needed further education and clinical guidelines, given the fewer than 40% felt they could even recognize an eating disorder. Gynecologists generally feel their training in eating disorders was inadequate. How do eating disorders influence pregnancy outcomes? Let's consider how eating disorders affect pregnancy and birth. The aforementioned Swedish study in patients previously admitted for their eating disorder, showed that the highest rates of induced abortion, that is, not miscarriage, but termination of a pregnancy, were in those with bulimia nervosa. Fully 23% of pregnancies in those with bulimia nervosa ended in termination. The highest rates of miscarriage were in those with BED. 47% of those with BED experienced a miscarriage, as opposed to 17% of controls. Infertility treatment was sought by 7.2% of patients with a history of eating disorder, as compared with 4.5% of controls. Patients with BED have been found to have higher birth weight babies compared with patients without eating disorders. This can potentially make delivery more complicated. The risk of delivering a baby who is unusually small at birth, called intrauterine growth retardation, IUGR, is well established in patients with anorexia nervosa. This risk appears to disappear when patients gain adequate weight during pregnancy. Twins births are more prevalent in patients with all types of eating disorders, which is likely related to assisted fertility. Other childbirth outcomes show mixed data. Typically, patients who needed a higher level of care due to their eating disorder or are sick while pregnant are found to have more complications, such as higher C-section rates or premature delivery. How does pregnancy influence eating disorders? What if we flip the question and ask how pregnancy affects eating disorder outcomes? The Norwegian Mother and Child Cohort Study was the first large-scale population study to evaluate the peripartum, meaning before and after birth, effect on eating disorders. It collected information on pregnant women in society. Patients were considered to have an eating disorder if they endorsed typical symptoms and behaviors within at least 6 months of becoming pregnant. The study found that compared with controls, women with an eating disorder gained more weight during pregnancy, worried more about their size and shape, and had higher rates of postpartum depression. Most often, eating disorder symptoms dramatically improve during pregnancy as patients are able to resist behaviors for the sake of their babies. This is certainly good news, but it can also mislead patients into thinking their eating disorder has resolved and thus they can stop therapy and nutrition monitoring. In fact, the Norwegian study showed that 18 months after delivery, only 50% of those with anorexia and 39% of patients with bulimia remained in recovery. At 36 months after delivery, that is, with a three-year-old running around, 41% of patients with anorexia and 70% of patients with bulimia had relapsed. Another large Swedish study evaluated 5,200 women who had ever been admitted during their lives for anorexia nervosa. These patients would be expected to have more severe eating disorders than those in a population study. The 63% of women who never got pregnant accounted for 86% of the deaths in the cohort. Childbearing actually decreased mortality by over 60%. It's not the pregnancy, it's not that pregnancy saves lives. Rather, it stands as a physiologic and emotional marker for a certain level of recovery. Case resolution. Angela. Angela's new doctor sees her in follow-up. Her estradiol levels are low. An ultrasound of her uterus shows that her uterus is small as well. The doctor explains that Angela's rigid eating patterns, inadequate caloric intake, exercise regimen, and low body weight are all contributing to her infertility. Her body essentially thinks it's in a starved and stressful environment. Accordingly, she has shut off sex hormone production in order to spare calories and prevent pregnancy. The doctor examines this physiology. Secondary amenorrhea due to hypothalamic hypogonadism is the same as she would have experienced during her 9 years with anorexia nervosa. The doctor advises her to ease up on food rules, gain some weight, cut back on intense exercise, and keep trying for pregnancy naturally. She also advises Angela to use a good quality lubricant during intercourse so that it's less painful. Angela is shocked. She had truly thought she was living in a healthy way in anticipation of pregnancy. She thinks she's okay with following her doctor's advice because her top priority is starting a family. However, she seeks out a therapist to have guidance and support just in case the process turns out to be more of a challenge than she had anticipated. At first, it feels alien, uncomfortable, and even unsafe to eat more and rest her body. When her clothing starts feeling tight, she really struggles. Her therapist urges her to buy appropriately sized clothing and keep pushing forward. Within 2 months, sex is less painful. Angela feels better than she has in years. She feels free from rules and she now realizes had dominated her life. She's started a productive stretch for work with her therapist and realizes she needed the final chapter of recovery before she became pregnant. She plans to continue to see her therapist at least through the first few months of parenthood and then see how things go. 3 months later, her pregnancy test is positive. That concludes the reading of Sick Enough, Chapter 19, Women's Sexual and Reproductive Health.